This morning we bring to a conclusion our series, The Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. Now I can imagine a few of you out there are thinking, wait a minute, you covered the 10th commandment last week. How can you have 11 messages on the 10 commandments? Did I miss one somewhere? No. Nope, there's not an 11th commandment that we're going to study, but rather, I want to focus on the last half of that series title, The Ten Commandments for the 21st Century, and wrap things up with how we can put this into practice in our daily lives. Now, there are many who question whether the Ten Commandments are for today. There are those who will suggest that the Ten Commandments aren't really mentioned a whole lot in the New Testament. We live under grace, not under law, so really we don't really need the Ten Commandments anymore. Now, the problem with that is they are mentioned in the New Testament. In several important places, Jesus mentioned two of them specifically in his Sermon on the Mount, and he taught that it was not enough to just obey the law outwardly, but even inwardly is important. The Apostle Paul, in our text this morning from Romans 13, names several of the Ten Commandments, and at no point does the New Testament ever say that we don't need them anymore, that we don't need to abide by them. These are God's principles and God's laws, which He has set forth for us to live. We're also told by others that the Ten Commandments are just a rigid code of do's and don'ts that were meant for primitive people. We've outgrown that. We are beyond that now. We don't need a bunch of negative prohibitions, but we rather need to be positive, tell people what good things there are. And yet that too is a misunderstanding of the Ten Commandments. They are not passé. They are not out of date. They very much are for today. So we conclude the Ten Commandments are for the 21st century. But there's another reason why I'm taking an additional study into the Ten Commandments, because both Jesus and Paul provide a summary statement that is very similar, and it affects how we put the Ten Commandments into practice in our daily lives. I'd like to begin with Jesus' words in Matthew 22. Gospel of Matthew chapter 22, beginning in verse 34. In this chapter, the Jewish leaders are taking turns trying to trip Jesus up, and they weren't having too much success. Verse 34 begins, "Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, asked Jesus, 'What is the greatest commandment of the law?'" Now understand, there were 613 commandments in the law. And I'm sure that they were hoping that Jesus would pick one that would alienate others, right? You know, if you announce a favorite about one, then you're going to turn off the people who like something else. But Jesus replied, not any of the Ten Commandments, not any of the prohibitions that they were so in favor of. He said instead, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is very much like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." And then he says, "All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Then Paul writes in Galatians 5, verse 14, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. In that statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And then the passage read earlier for us in Romans 13, "Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. The commandments: do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, and whatever other commandment there might be, are summed up in this one rule: love your neighbor as yourself. Their love does no harm to its neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Now, allow me to just very briefly address the first phrase in verse 8, because this has caused some misunderstanding and confusion among some Christians. Paul says, let no debt remain outstanding. Some translations will simply say, owe no one anything. That's the literal Greek of this phrase. And people have wondered, is it wrong then to borrow money? Is it wrong to take out a mortgage for a house or to borrow money to buy a car or something else? Is it wrong to have any debt whatsoever? I don't believe so. When you look throughout Scripture, borrowing is not condemned. Borrowing and not paying back is condemned. That's what Paul's talking about here. He's not saying you should never go into debt. He's saying make sure you pay it back. That's the emphasis here. I have known some Christians and even some ministries that say debt is wrong and we will never go into debt. I don't believe that's what the Bible teaches. What the Bible teaches is be responsible. And if you do borrow money, if you do go into debt, pay it back. Don't get into so much debt you can't pay it back. And by all means, don't default on a loan. Few things bring greater reproach on a Christian's testimony than the accumulation of debts and the refusal to pay them. Psalm 37, verse 21 says pointedly, the wicked borrow and do not repay. Now you'll notice he did not just say the wicked borrow. Says the wicked borrow and do not repay. So understand, Paul is not saying you can never borrow. He's saying pay it back. Be responsible. But then he goes on. There's one debt that we can never pay back, and that is the debt to love one another. I like the way that the Living Bible renders this passage. It says, pay all your debts. Except the debt of love for others, never finish paying that. For if you love them, you will be obeying all of God's laws, fulfilling all his requirements. If you love your neighbor as much as you love yourself, you will not want to harm or cheat him, or kill him, or steal from him. And you won't sin with his wife, or want what is his, or do anything else the Ten Commandments say is wrong. All ten are wrapped up in this one, to love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to anyone. That's why it fully satisfies all of God's requirements. It is the only law you need. Now, I'll admit, as I was putting this message together and particularly reading that rendition, the old Beatles song came to mind. All you need is love, right? Love is all you need. And then I thought, well, is that really right? I want to first consider today the importance of love. When asked to identify the greatest commandment, Jesus said, love God, love one another. These are the two commands on which all the Old Testament hangs. That phrase, the law and the prophets, that was a way of speaking of all of the Hebrew Scriptures. So if you want to understand the Old Testament, understand those two statements, love God, love each other. Now, I'm sure some of you are saying, wait a minute, that's not what the Old Testament's about. The Old Testament's about the wrath of God, and he's going to come and judge you, and it's all negative. No, it's not. Jesus said right here, the whole Old Testament stands on these two ideas, love God, love one another. Earlier in this series on the Ten Commandments, we talked about how you can break down the Ten Commandments into two groups. The first four speak of our relationship to God, the last six of our relationship to each other. So love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength fulfills the first four commandments. Love your neighbor as yourself fulfills the last six. What Jesus was saying was, here's the Ten Commandments in one word, love. Love God, love one another. Now, this in no way minimizes the law. If anything, it magnifies it. Jesus said in Matthew 5:17, do not think I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. Again, the Old Testament. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. And Jesus, through his life, demonstrated what loving God and loving others is all about. He gave us a pattern that we should walk in his steps. We should follow his example. To love God, to love others, is to bring to completion the deepest intent of the Old Testament law. This is what God was trying to get his people to do. It was not just a bunch of restrictions where God said, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. That's not what the Old Testament is about. It is about love. Loving God, loving each other. Now, it is true that loving God and others fulfills the law, but what Paul focuses on is more the latter. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that word for neighbor, it's the word heteros in the Greek, which means of a different kind. You see, it's easy to love people that look like us, who dress like us, and who talk like us, and who think like us, who act like us. It's easy to love people who are of the same color of skin, in a similar ethnic background, who may share in our interests, in whom we have a lot in common. But that's not the neighbor that God identifies when he says, love your neighbor as yourself. He's saying, love the person that's different from you. The one who is different in beliefs and theology. The one who is different in personality. Different in politics. Ooh, that's a tough one. Different in tastes. Difference in mannerisms. Difference in race. In values. In history. In other words, with love, difference should make no difference. And if you'll remember one of Jesus' most familiar parables, the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? We know that one. Why was that teaching given? Because somebody asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? Jesus had quoted this very commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, and he says, who's my neighbor? And Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. What was the point of the Good Samaritan? You could not find two people more different than Jews and Samaritans. They were not only different, they were hostile. They hated each other. They couldn't stand one another. And yet, Jesus dares to tell a story where the hero is a Samaritan taking care of a Jew who had been victimized. What he's saying is you love your neighbor even if they're totally different than you. Even if on the surface you don't even like them, you are still required to love them. And that has very little to do with how you feel about them. It's how you act toward them. So the importance of love. It's the basic principle of the Christian life. So you say, well, if we just practice love, if we just love God and love others, then we don't need any other laws, right? Not so fast. Because what love needs is instruction. We need to know how to love. To just say, go love everybody, what's that mean? How do I do that? That's where the law comes in. The law instructs us on how to love. I want to point out that the two statements that Jesus made, the two greatest commandments, were not things he made up on the top of his head. These were things that were firmly established in the Jewish scriptures. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul is found in Deuteronomy 6:5. And here's a shocker. You might want to brace yourself for this one. Love your neighbor as yourself comes from Leviticus. Is that a shocker? Leviticus? Are you kidding? Leviticus is all about mildew and mold and yucky stuff that I don't want to talk about. It's all these regulations that I don't get. No, right in the middle of Leviticus, God says, love your neighbor as yourself. Because that's what the law is about. It's about loving God. It's about loving others. And specifically, the Ten Commandments are an explanation of what it means to love God and to love one another. Many years ago, there was a philosophy that came out called situation ethics. Anybody remember that? This was back maybe in the 60s and 70s. It was real popular. We don't need laws. We don't need rules. All you need is love. Everybody sing together now, right? And they said that every situation could be determined by what is the loving thing to do. Now, in spirit, they got it right, because that is what we ought to do. The problem is, they said, there are no rules. There's no instruction. There isn't how to do it. I might think that loving someone means popping them in the jaw when I don't agree with them. And if I'm the one determining what love is, it can be that subjective. The fact is, love needs direction. Love needs instruction. That's why Paul did not write, love is the end of the law. He said, love is the fulfilling of the law. We still need God's instructions as to how to love. Love and law need each other. Love needs law for its direction. Law needs love for its inspiration. Love fulfills the law because, in the final analysis, law is the expression of love in the complexities of our fallen world. We run into a lot of strange situations. And if we're just relying on some vague feeling to guide us in what to do, we're going to get ourselves in trouble. We need the instructions on love that the law provides. J.I. Packer observes, law and love are not opponents but allies, forming together the axis of true morality. Law needs love as its drive, else we get the Pharisaism that puts principles before people and says that you can be perfectly good without loving your neighbor. And love needs law as its eyes to direct it. To want to love someone Christianly does not in and of itself tell you how to do it. Only as we observe the limits set by God's law can we really do people good. So all of these other commands in the law, the Ten Commandments, all of the other 600 or so commandments, they're not additions to the laws of love. They are explanations of them. Every law you read, Old or New Testament, will fall under one of two categories. It's how to love God or it's how to love each other. So they are actually an explanation and an instruction on how to do it. So the laws are not unnecessary. We need them in order to know how to love. When we read 1 John 5:3, this is the love of God that we keep His commandments. We see that commandment keeping is the only true way to love God. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll do what I tell you. And then you say, well, what is God's commandment? To love Him and to love others. That's circular reasoning. You're right, it is. To love God is to obey Him, and to obey Him is to love. And you never get out of that. It's a continuous cycle of life. We love God, therefore we want to obey His commandments, and His commandments are to love Him and to love others. And that is a debt that is never paid off. Now, to draw the conclusion from Paul's statement that love is the fulfilling of the law, that we can just forget about the Ten Commandments, we can do away with the Old Testament, I think is mistaken. For while we almost certainly need the summary to save us from missing the forest from the trees and from understanding the particular commandments in a rigid, literalistic, loveless way, we are equally in need of the particular commandments to save us from resting on this vague, often hypocritical sentiment, which in ourselves and quite often even in others, we're all prone to mistake for love. So with that in mind, let's consider the implications of love. Returning to Romans 13, in verse 9 it says, the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet. Do those sound vaguely familiar? We've been talking about those over the last several weeks. And whatever other commandments there may be, they're summed up in this one rule, love your neighbor as yourself. We obviously cannot claim to love our neighbor if we're stealing from him and killing him and even coveting what they have. Rest assured, there is no such thing as a victimless sin. But as we have seen, it's not enough to not do the don'ts in God's law. Most of the Ten Commandments have been written in a negative form because it's easier to identify what not to do than all of the things we are to do. Think about the Garden of Eden. I don't know how big the Garden of Eden was. I'm not sure how many fruit trees there were, but there were a lot. And God did not take Adam and Eve and say, now you can eat from this one, and 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 this one. No. He said, there's one I want you to stay away from. It's right in the middle of the garden. Now, implied in that was, you are free to eat from all the others. But it's a lot simpler to say the one that you shouldn't do as compared to the many that you can. That's why the Ten Commandments, so many of them are written negatively. Because if God were to write down everything we should do for one another, you couldn't fit it in a book. You couldn't carry it around with you. So instead, God prohibits, He sets some boundaries, and says you are free within these limitations. Think of the negatively stated commands, the thou shalt nots, if you will, as a fence surrounding a large yard or a field. The fence is there to keep a child or an animal in for their own protection. Now they have all of the yard inside the fence that they can enjoy, but the fence is there for their protection. Now, Tammy and I have a little dog named Ruby. Ruby's a little dog. She weighs all of about 12 pounds. Compared to her size, the yard we have is huge. Now, it doesn't have a fence on it. And it doesn't matter how big our yard is, Ruby has to go next door. She's got to go over to the sidewalk, which is out by the street. Why? Because she's a dog. That's what dogs do. We're not much better. Chuck Swindoll tells a story that illustrates really our human nature. He said, I have a friend who's a pastor that has seven children. And one day he's in his study and he can hear his kids outside his window playing. And he knows there's an alley that runs by their property and cars go up and down that alley. So he's concerned that they don't get out into the alley and get hit. So he goes outside and he says, children, do not go into the alley. If you go into the alley, Dad's going to spank you. So the kids say, well, where's the alley start? So he goes and he gets a piece of chalk and he makes a big line right at the edge of the property and said, this is where the alley begins. Do not cross this line. Goes back inside, starts to work. He suddenly realizes it's gotten real quiet outside. And anybody that has kids know when it gets real quiet, that's not good. So he stands up at his desk and he looks out the window. And there those seven children are in a straight line with their toes right at the line. They had their whole yard to play in, but when they're given the boundary, they want to see how close they can get without going over. And isn't that the way we often live? I know a lot of people that say, how far can I get from God and still be a Christian? Instead of how close can I get to God and still be human? We want to press the edges. God told Adam and Eve, you can eat from any tree of the garden. But what's the one tree that Adam and Eve ended up at? The one in the middle. You say, well, maybe God shouldn't have told them. What? So they could just by accident eat from the wrong tree? No, you have to have instruction. But because of our sin nature, we're drawn toward them. That's why Paul said in Romans, sin, taking advantage of the situation, used the law to show me what sin was. Sin nature says, I want to do something bad, and the law tells me what's bad. Doesn't mean the law is bad, it means I am. But what Jesus is saying here is, instead of focusing on don't, love God, love one another. Now, for those kids in the alley, that chalk line was important because if they would abide by it, they'd keep safe. But if all they did was stand with their toes on the line, they weren't really having fun, were they? They weren't really enjoying the yard and what they could be doing. God gives us these prohibitions to protect us, but he doesn't expect us to dwell on them. Live your life and live a life of love. The whole field of ethics, which is the determination between right and wrong, are to be grounded in the love that comes from God. And he says that loving God and loving one another summarizes the whole instruction God gives us. He also told his disciples to love their enemies. Bless those who persecute you. Pray for those who hate you. Love goes beyond those that are easy to love. And Paul says that this kind of love is a fulfilling of the law. I believe that can only happen when the love of God is in our own hearts. When the Spirit of God lives within us and enables us to love. I'm not sure that's possible to do that outside of God's love. We sang earlier, when love shines in, and when love shines in our lives, it makes a difference. But it shouldn't end there. It should be reflected out toward others and reflected back to God. That's what it means to live a life of love. So are the Ten Commandments for the 21st century? Yes, I believe they are. I believe they provide guidelines as to what loving God and loving others is all about. But they're only that. They're only guidelines. There is so much more than not doing harm to our neighbors. There's so much more than not breaking one of God's commands. You know, you can not harm somebody by ignoring them, but I don't think you would think that is love. Love is something positive. Love serves. Love helps. Love encourages. Love builds up. It doesn't tear down. Love is more than not doing wrong. It is doing right. And the possibilities of doing right are endless. Yet the negative commands of Scripture do help us to avoid hurting God, harming others, and ultimately harming ourselves. And they're not directed at everybody else. I hope when you hear God's commands, you don't say, boy, I hope someone else is listening to this. No, they're for us. We need to hear these things. Leslie Flynn writes about a longtime deacon who is rather hard to get along with. And one day he came to the preacher and said, I'm going to visit the Holy Land. And when I get there, I'm going to climb Mount Sinai and shout the Ten Commandments at the top of my lungs. I've got a better suggestion, the pastor replied. Stay at home and keep them. Maybe the best way to conclude this message, and in fact this whole series, is with Paul's words in Ephesians 5, verses 1 and 2. Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love. Just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and a sacrifice to God. Do you want to know what the Christian life is? Live a life of love. Love God. Love one another. Not just love one another within the family. Love those that are different than you. Love those that are opposite from you. You want to know who qualifies as somebody you need to love? If they're breathing, love them. Pretty well sums it up. Live a life of love. And when we do that, we are actually imitating God. We bear a striking resemblance to our Heavenly Father when we live a life of love. And if we focus on doing the do's, we won't have time to do the don'ts. That's the kind of life we ought to live as children of God. So I guess in a sense, the Beatles did get it right. All you need is love. Love is truly all you need. But God has given us His Word to tell us what true love is all about. And as we follow the instructions of His Word, we truly will live a life of love. And when we do that, we have fulfilled His law.